Yeah, I didn't say anything about sex, Ken.
Oh.
Someone's mind is in the gutter. Per usual.
I only keep it there so you'll recognize me.
I'm Justin Salvinger, Ken Hengi.
I love having that accounted for.
We're elitist bastards.
Yep.
We've been to the movies.
We have.
We should also mention
that we are coming to you.
Yes.
More or less live, at least when we were recording this.
Yes. It's not really live. Since we're being recorded.
Yeah, but at some point we were live.
Same
for Julius Caesar.
Because we don't know when anybody's going to hear this.
This
we could
true.
Be dead by the time.
This is entirely likely, in fact.
This roof could collapse on us.
This
could be the last record of our existence.
Wow.
And yet we're going to sit here and talk about dumbass movies.
That's true. But
what else would we do? Ken?
You know,
I don't know.
I mean, yeah.
There's going to be something.
There probably
right?
is.
I'm going to reassess
everything. Anyway. You know? Yeah, you probably should, but that's another story.
Maybe I will.
Maybe you should. Anyway, this
we'll
is...
give Marcy a call.
Where are we?
We're in the Carolina Asheville.
Yeah.
Specifically...
in the Cinema Lounge Bar.
Yes, at the Cinema Lounge Bar. Can't be in it.
We could be under it soon.
You could be under it.
That's true.
But not in it.
One of these nights I'm going to drink. I did indeed. I saw the double hour.
What does that mean?
It's that point on a clock where the two are doubled, like 11:11 or 12:12 or 10:10.
Aren't you supposed to make a wish?
Yes, that's the idea.
Okay.
Which the movie does explain this and then immediately debunks it as having any value whatsoever, which is good because the movie itself will debunk it for having any value whatsoever.
Right.
It's a very hard film to talk about because it exists on its plot twists and contrivances. And the whole truth or illusion, toots, which is which, and making it very hard. Let's just say that a Slovenian immigrant and an Italian gentleman meet at a speed dating thing, and it looks like it's going to be a really good romance between the two of them. And they're both two lonely people and could certainly stand something.
Right.
You know, even if it was just a nice rub down. This is fine up to the point that he takes her to the estate where he works as the security guard / specialists and turns the alarm system off so that he can show her around, whereupon they are attacked by masked gentlemen who tie them up and denude the house. And anything that I tell you beyond that gives away too much. As far as the plot's concerned, it's not as clever as it thinks. I think that to me that was a problem. It's because of the way it's structured, though. It can be any number of different things. Depending, it can be a romance, it can be a mystery, it can be a film noir, or it can even be what the Italians call giallo, which is essentially a shock machine film. There is a sequence where she thinks she's being haunted, which is right out of a Dario Argento movie without any slashing going on. But, I mean, it was entertaining. But once it got past its biggest twist, I pretty much knew what was going to happen, and it pretty much did what I thought it was going to do. It's very plot-driven. And I can't imagine... people say that it has repeat value, and that would be based on the performances, I guess. The performances are excellent. The characters are well-drawn. They're even well drawn on the various levels of reality in which the thing takes place. But once you unravel the plot, I don't know that there's enough there that would have me watch it a second time. But I did enjoy it, and I would recommend it.
You watched Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes,
4.
I did. No.
On Strangest Tides.
Stranger.
Oh.
Stranger. Stranger? Strange. On Strange Tides, I think it is.
It is Stranger Tides.
Stranger Tides. I don't know. It's some goddamn name or other.
I'm glad I confused you.
You have. It is Stranger.
It's Pirates of the Caribbean 4.
Yes, let's just call it Pirates of the Caribbean 4 and be done with it. I watched it. It's...
Stranger Brides.
Muzzle him.
On Mangy Brides.
I'm thinking of a word.
The dude abides. Is that... Why isn't that on the internet?
Come here a minute.
Pirates of the Caribbean.
The dude abides.
Yeah.
Well, you should do that.
I don't want to.
You should. Anyway, it's Pirates 4. And although I went several rounds with no more nor less than two editors on this yesterday, Well, the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
I don't want to see you.
I know. Yes.
Okay. I can give my argument for why they shouldn't mess with our stars.
Yes, well.
If he wants to...
Well, nonetheless, the whole thing was that it was supposed to be, I wanted it to be 4 stars. They didn't think my review read like 4 stars. I thought it did. They made me put in extra sentences to make it sound a little bit more like it should be 4 stars in their view. And I'm assuming it went in as 4 stars.
Did either one of them see this movie?
No, but I did remark on what was wrong with the movie. But at the same time, as I told one of them, Road to Bally, I would say even worse things about it, and I would still give it 4 stars, and that's the level I put this movie on. It's like a late-period road picture. It's not great, but it's full of people that you like doing things you've liked seeing them do in the past. And on that basis, it's fine. Rob Marshall was not a great idea for a director. He's not as inventive as Gore Verbinski. The rumor has it, however, that as near as anyone can determine, Rob Marshall got the job mostly because he's a really nice guy, which I guess is reason enough. And then again,
a lot of people.
It would.
Getting jobs.
It doesn't explain Brett Ratner. But I mean, he doesn't completely ruin the film. But there is a sequence that Verbinski could have mined for comic gold that he just kind of tosses off, and that kind of bothered me. The structure is a little not great because the best line in the film is uttered by Keith Richards in a even shorter than his appearance in the last film, cameo, and it's easily within the first 20 minutes of a 137-minute movie.
Right.
It does set up a sequel. There are some other bright lines in it. If you like Johnny Depp playing Captain Jack Sparrow and pairing him with Penelope Cruz was an inspired idea, there's absolutely no reason I can think of, and from anybody that I know that I've spoken to who likes him or likes the character or likes the series, I have not found anybody who actually disliked it and didn't, you know, wasn't glad they had seen it. And that's pretty much where I am on it. Will I ever see it again? Well, I've never seen the others again, so I don't see why I would expect to see
it. You ever saw the first one again?
I bought it, but I don't think I've ever watched it. But I'm really good at buying and not watching.
Alright, and then the last film you saw?
13 Assassins.
Is that your samurai impression?
Yes. That's sort of my
There's a lot of grunting in that movie.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of grunting in all samurai movies. My original experience with samurai movies was a Bromo Seltzer salesman could clean up around that joint. Because they sound like they all have really bad digestion. Anyway, now, 13 Assassins was a film that kind of surprised me.
Uh-huh.
Because even though Mr. Souther here had seen it at Action Fest and pronounced it the best thing that he'd seen all year,
and
which
it still is,
which may say more about all year than it says about 13 Assassins, although
right.
I think 13 Assassins is very good.
I think it would, for me at least, it would. Regardless of, unless a whole bunch of really amazing movies came out, which, God forbid.
It's possible, but it sure doesn't look like it's happening.
No.
But the thing about it is that the trailer did nothing for me.
Right.
So I was quite surprised to find that, well, you're probably right. And the more I thought about it, the more I dug into the film, the more I thought that, yeah, it probably is the best thing that's come out this year.
Well, I know you had... mentioned after you watched it you weren't as impressed as
well,
I was.
Well, I think that's partly by virtue of the fact that you had painted something far gorier than I saw.
Okay.
And I was kind of let down that there wasn't...
Well, there are, like, instances of...
Yes, but there's not really a whole lot of really... You know, bear in mind, you told me about its gore quotient the same weekend that I saw Hobo with a Shotgun.
Right. Yeah, it's not. Yeah, not, no, nothing like that.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to top that gore quotient. Right. So, you know, maybe I was expecting
now there's
it.
A higher body count. Obviously.
Good Lord, yes. But I mean, it's
like RoboCop body count. This thing, maybe.
Yeah.
All three RoboCops.
I'm sure we could probably come up with a really tasteless remark to make, but we're not going to. I mean, it's a movie. I actually think it probably is in Seven Samurai territory if it doesn't quite get there. But then again, I'm not the world's greatest supporter of Seven Samurai, so bear that in mind. The premise is, you know, simple. You've got this psychotic, despotic Lord Naragutsu, or something like that anyway, who...
Evil guy.
Boy, he's bad. Yeah, I mean, he's thoroughly, totally, completely detestable and unnerving.
But yet sort of amusing and...
In a really sick,
like
twisted
a whimsically
way. He's like
evil.
A whimsical psychotic. But boy, is he psychotic.
Postulate on... Like that scene where he's talking about how he's never experienced war before, but...
Yeah, but then it's immediately followed by the really scary concept that if he, once he retains ultimate power in Japan, he wants to bring back the age of war. And this is really a frightening, you know, thing.
Just because it gives men purpose.
No, I think it's just because it gives him chuckles.
Well, that too.
But in essence, what you have is some people who are alarmed at what will happen if this man does get... any higher power than he already has. Because, I mean, he gets around. I mean, this is a guy who goes to a friend's, the person he's staying with, and rapes the guy's daughter-in-law. And when the guy's husband raises an objection to this, he kills him. And then, just for good measure, he kills her. And there's also a woman that we see who has no arms, feet, or tongue, which is that's what he left her like after he raped her. And the rest of her family are all dead. And she scrawls out with her a pen or a paintbrush in her mouth, "Total massacre" on a piece of paper. So I mean, he needs to be removed. And so what we have are really 12 samurai who set out to take care of this situation.
But
13 assassins, because they pick up this really wigged out character who earns a precarious livelihood in the woods, which I actually think he's probably a really important character, but that's even though he's presented in an essentially comic frame. But I don't want to say too much about that, but it's the film is essentially divided into two halves. The first half is assembling these people and getting to the position, and there's easily 50 to 60 minutes of the film is
right. Just set up.
Yeah, but I mean, but after that, the whole film is one long battle, and it's beautifully sustained and choreographed. There are very few computer effects. The only thing I really suspect is a computer effect or the burning bulls.
Well, that's obviously.
I hope that's a computer effect. Yeah. Even though it has the, you know, it looks like something out of a René Magritte painting of a flaming rhinoceros or a flaming giraffe or something. But, I mean, it's beautifully sustained, and it's constantly watchable. It's exciting. It's compelling. And, praise Yahweh, the action is coherent. And you can tell who's doing what to whom as long as you've sorted out the characters, which...
Yeah.
Might not be the easiest thing because these guys tend to lot of them look a kind of alike, especially in that, you know, with the hair missing and the top knot and all that stuff.
I think watching it a second time, because I still haven't seen it. I've seen it the one time at Action Fest. I think watching it a second time and knowing, having a better grasp on who everybody is from the onset
would probably be in the film's favor. But it's a terrific film, and I hope. Since Asheville is not big on supporting Asian cinema, I think Mother is the one exception I can think of that isn't Crouching Tiger or Hero. I really hope that people will turn out for this, and they need to see it big, because it really is, it's true spectacle, and a television set just ain't going to cut it. What is this Thursday Horror Picture Show of which he speaks?
Argento's Inferno.
Oh, and where are we showing that?
At the Cinema Lounge.
Yes.
8 o'clock on Thursday.
That's right. At Carolina.
Yes.
And that's Thursday.
At 8. I just said that.
Yeah, but that's Thursday, May 26th?
Yes.
Yeah. And the film, as you noted, yes, it was Dario Argento's Inferno, which is...
Your favorite director?
Well, I'm amused by him. I don't really... I can't say that he's my favorite director by any stretch of the imagination. But I find his films interesting and entertaining, partly because they're so messed up. When I first saw this film, which was 20-odd years ago, I was vastly entertained because it made no sense. But then again, I find that to be largely true of all Argento pictures, is either they don't make sense, or there are still going to be, even things that kind of make sense, like Phenomena, has things within it that, you know, I've still not figured out why there is an ominous zoom-in on the exhaust pipe on a car, complete with ominous music in that film. I don't know. I mean, this has a setup with no real plot. I mean, you've got the premise is there are these three apartment buildings. One is in Germany, and we kind of dealt with that in Suspiria, which is generally considered to be one of his best films, which I don't get because it not only makes no sense, it has the lamest ending I've ever seen on any film. It's a ghost. Stab it. Oh, it's over. This one isn't much better, but it's certainly bigger. Okay. There are these three apartment buildings inhabited by, there's one in Germany, one in Italy, and one in New York. And we visit both of the Italian and the New York one, although the New York one is the predominant set. They are inhabited by these creatures called the Three Sisters. And the nastiest one lives in New York, which is probably why we're there. And other than the fact that anybody that is in the apartment building pretty much is on the list for being somehow gorily dispatched, there's nothing else about the rest of it. It's just a series of really striking-looking gory deaths. It's a beautiful to look at film. It has sequences that just don't have no. You know, a man takes a bag of cats, a sack full of cats, down to the river, which is apparently a quarter of an inch deep, to drown. Well, while he's in the process of doing this, since he's on crutches, he falls and can't get up in this quarter of an inch of water. I can't quite figure out why. And this is all taking place during the dark of the moon. There's a lunar eclipse going on. So he is then set upon by rats who start to eat him alive until a not-so-friendly hot dog vendor from across the way comes running up with a butcher knife, you are assuming, to fend off the rats. And so he kills the hapless guy lying in the half inch of water. It makes no sense whatsoever. There's a death by cats scene, which is hysterically funny because you can virtually see these stagehands throwing these cats on this woman, because, I mean, they're not attacking her. And there are insert shots of snarling cats and a cat. We keep seeing the same shot of a cat's claws. And it's a dumb movie, but it's really entertaining because it's dumb. And I don't understand anything about this house. It's supposed to be built in 1910. It's designed in Art Deco, which is definitely not something that was around in 1910. And then again, part of the problem seems to be with this house, seems to be because there's a plaque on it that notes Gurdjieff slept here. So, you know, I guess that's part of what all this is about. It makes no sense, and the ending is really dumb, but it's fun.
Are you excited to see this?
Not really.
Have you seen any of Argento's films?
You saw Phenomena.
Yeah, just that one.
And he's kind of disappointed that this one doesn't end with a razor-wielding chimpanzee. Yeah. And that is really hard to top, I'll admit.
I feel like anything this movie does is just going to be disappointing. Because there's a razor-wielding chimpanzee.
Well,
or something akin to that.
The cat drowning scene might qualify. Might.
Probably not. It's a chimpanzee with a razor can.
I know. It is hard to. Okay.
Out of nowhere.
He
finds it in a trash can.
In a
wanders
park.
Around and manages to find where the killer should be.
We call that clever scripting in the business.
I know.
Okay.
I mean,
and at the right moment.
I know. Perfect.
It is perfect. It's a wonderful ending.
It's mocking up.
That's right.
What about the actual film society?
What about it?
Tell me about it.
Well, the Asheville Film Society is a great... No. The Asheville Film Society is this week showing Frank Borzage's Seventh Heaven.
Where is it, Ken?
It's in the same place as the goddamn Thursday Horror Picture Show. And if you didn't pay attention to that, you can back up. And Borzage's Seventh Heaven is a 1927 film. It's a silent with a
not
musical.
Not talking about the hour drama.
Dear God, no.
Christian drama.
No. No.
TV drama.
No. And no.
ABC
and
family.
This is, if it weren't for the existence of Sunrise, this would get my vote for best silent movie ever made. And they're a product of the same time. They're when William Fox, who decided that he wanted to actually make really artistic movies that would stand out from the crowd, brought F.W. Murnau over from Germany. Murnau and Borzage immediately hit it off and started swapping ideas. So Borzage is definitely influenced by Murnau because Borzage's earlier films are not very mobile, but it's a two-way street of influence. This, however, is just remarkable. It's probably more audience, certainly more popular at the time than Sunrise. And it still works today. And it's one of those films that works in part because it's silent. And that's not just because you can't hear what a Nance Charles Farrell sounds like in a silent movie. It's the fact that this whole heightened unreality is much more palatable. And there's a shot in it that never fails to just absolutely amaze me, which is, it's not the fact that when I first saw the shot, which is a tracking shot, a vertical tracking shot, that actually passes up seven floors of set. And at first I couldn't figure out how they did it. And obviously they're on an elevator and it's a shaved set with one side missing. But what still gets me about this is this means that somebody had the wherewithal to build a seven-story high set just for this one shot. I mean, that's really, that's dedication. And it's still a startling thing to see now. So, come, see it, and see the other things. I mean, it's a goopy love story between a sewer worker and a prostitute. That sounds dumber than hell, but it works. In fact, nearly all of it works.
Have you seen it?
No, I've seen that scene.
Which is pretty amazing.
What's upcoming this week?
My lunch. No. Well, other than 13 Assassins, which we talked about at length, we have...
Hangover 2, Part 2, sorry.
The Hangover Part 2.
Right.
Let's get it right. From part a numeral a, 2.
Part of a quadrilogy, perhaps.
Could easily be, yes. And although they have lured
part
me...
Part 2 of 16.
They have tried to lure me into this by putting a cigarette-smoking monkey, thereby imbuing the film with some level of Simeon value. I really believe this is the sort of thing that belongs to our Mr. Souther, not only because he saw the first one.
But also because I'm not allowed to watch good movies.
And also because he can pronounce Zach, whatever his name.
Galifianakis.
There you go. He can pronounce that.
You don't have to pronounce it, Ken. You just have to type it with your fingers.
I can type it. I just can't pronounce it.
Well, then I don't know what.
I want to sound out all the letters, you see. Yeah. Which makes it Galifianakis or Galifianakis.
See.
Whatever. Anyway, that's opening, as is Kung Fu Panda 2. It's not so pretentious. It's not the Kung Fu Panda 2, and it's got a regular old Arabic numeral. And there's a part two. The first one was fine. I enjoyed it. It was pretty. It was nice to look at. The interplay between Dustin Hoffman and Jack Black was terrific, which is even more amazing because there's always the possibility that they never actually had any interplay. They may have been recorded at separate times. I don't know.
Do you want to interact with Jack Black?
Probably not.
Well, there you go.
But in any case, the first film was pretty charming and was really nice to look at. And this is one of the few films I think might actually benefit from being in 3D. So, I'm curious.
I'm not getting paid to watch it.
You didn't pay to watch anything. What the hell are you talking about?
I'm not getting paid to watch Panda. Okay. Therefore, I don't give a damn about it.
If I come out and tell you it's wonderful, will you go see it?
Yes, but until then, I don't have time for it. I'll be watching however many hours is Hangover 2.
Do you want me to do Hangover 2?
No.
Here we go.
I don't.
You see, he doesn't want it, but he's going to bitch about it.
Can't be worse than Decisions.
Yeah, but I bet it's not as funny as Decisions.
Decisions was not that funny. It was just sort of...
Yeah, but it reads funny when you wrote about it. So, does that take care of us?
I don't know. What else is... Oh, and you forgot Double Hour opens as
well.
Oh,
and Double Hour opens on Friday, too, yes.
Piss Neil off.
It was a long time since we talked about that. That was...
Ages ago.
Ages. Ages. And at my age, I forget things.
It's true.
Where are we? Okay. No, nonetheless. I believe that settles us for this week. We are Ken Hanke and Justin Souther.
Uh-huh.
And we are the movie critics for the... some paper or... the Mountain Express, I think it is. Who are the fine folks who make these podcast possible, so complain to them, not to us. And the podcasts are indeed produced, cohered, and otherwise dealt with by... See if I can get it all in here. Squire Miami Steve, the Colonel Shanafelt. Did I leave something out?
Crocodile.
Oh! Crocodile Hunter. I did leave. What the hell is that? What is that? What does that mean?
Crocodile.
That's a crocodile.
Then I only have one hand.
It's him
for
hunting
you.
The crocodile.
This is crocodile tech. This is crocodile hunting technique.
You probably should have done it. I know, yeah. Well, that's just as well, probably. It'll be considered tasteless. And I don't want to be considered tasteless.